show you something, so be with me a little bit. Turn to page 488. Chapter 18 of Acharei Mos is known as the Parsha of Arayot. The word Arayot means illicit sexual relationships. And this is read not only today, not only this coming Shabbat, but we read it specifically Yom Kippur in the afternoon. There are many reasons that are given why we read it Yom Kippur in the afternoon. A simple reason is that in the morning we read the beginning of Acharei Mos, so we may as well finish the Parsha. The main reason that we read it in the afternoon, because for those people who are into a Yom Kippur experience, the main part of doing tshuva, in the nighttime before, when you do Kol Nidre, you begin to think. And you know, this is my last chance, I'm going to do tshuva. And you begin to think about the issues that you never usually thought about the whole year. Then the next morning, you're into it, and you're about to maybe make a change, and you're really not sure 100%. And then you do Mincha and Ne'ilah, the last 3 hours of the day, as the sun is about to set. And it's like you have 2.5-3 hours time on what to do and how to do it. And the rabbi said, most people fail in the area of sexuality, some aspect of sexuality. And therefore we're going to read the Parsha of Arayos on Yom Kippur afternoon. So when a person does teshuvah in the powerful prayer of Ne'ilah, hopefully they will incorporate those aspects within themselves. So chapter 18, and let me tell you something about the Torah, which I know you know. The Torah is always, any time the Torah says something, that there is a warning. That's called in Hebrew an azhara, a warning. And later on, there's an onesh, which is a punishment. Throughout the Torah, whenever a azhara is mentioned, the onesh is mentioned either in the same sentence or a sentence or two later. So it says you shouldn't do work on Shabbat, and he who does works on Shabbat, you know, so on and so forth. The only place in the whole Torah where the punishment is not mentioned with the warning are these chapters. So I'm going to repeat to you page 488. Chapter 18 is the chapter of the warnings which are mentioned, what should not be done in the category of arayot, illicit sexual aspects of yourself and your relationship with your spouse, with your family members, with your in-laws, with your daughter, with your son, with your all different types of relationships, are all mentioned in this parsha. Interestingly, turn to page 492. Supposedly, there's one thing mentioned in this parsha that's a little different than sexual deviances, and that is the prohibition of molech. Molech is the pagan god that people worship, and in the worship of worshiping molech, M-O-L-E-C-H, you give your son or your daughter as a sacrifice to the molech. And it's a very intense thing, and it says, by doing this, v'lo techalel et shem Elohecha, that's obviously not the right thing to do, and if you do it, it brings about a desecration of God's name. That's on page 492, sentence 21. In sentence 22 is the prohibition against homosexuality. Ve'et zachar lo tishkav mishkavei isha, to'evahi, it is considered an abomination. So right now, as I'm developing this shiur, I'm highlighting The normal aspect of our rayot, which are mentioned in this parsha, illicit sexual aspects. Suddenly the molech is thrown in, of the sacrifice of your son and daughter. And right after the molech is thrown in, it says about the prohibition of homosexuality. Now turn to the next page, on page 493. If you do these things, says the Torah, Vataki ha'aret et yoshvecha, sentence 25. You know what the earth is going to do to you? It's a very interesting expression. For those who know Hebrew and are learning it with Ken after my class, you will eventually get a good sense of this. Vataki ha'aret et yoshvecha, the earth will vomit you out, will vomit out its inhabitants. And what it basically means, that there's a balance, there's a harmony between human nature and nature. And the more people do things that are reprehensible and of an illicit nature, the more there will be a dissonance between the earth and between human nature, and then the earth will vomit you out because there's not adequate harmony. That is chapter 18 in a very schematic way. So let me repeat again. This chapter is read not only this coming Shabbat, but Yom Kippur afternoon. It's a very, very important part. And it mentions all the illicit relationships that you shouldn't have, a father with his daughter, a mother with a son, a mother, a stepmother, all the things that you should not be involved with sexually. Then it says about the molech, then it talks about homosexuality, and if you do these things, not one of the punishments, but a consequence. There's a difference between a punishment and a consequence. The consequence of doing these things is that you won't feel, the earth will not feel comfortable, and the earth will get rid of you. Any questions on chapter 18? Yes.
What is the difference between a sin and an abomination? The word abomination really means something that's hateful.
Not hateful. The word abomination, the rabbis...
Is the same word in Hebrew used for each one?
The word to'evah, which is referring to this usual translated abomination, the rabbis say the word to'evah means to'evah, which means to'eh, he goes astray in it. And the word to'evah is, you also describe all the things that took place in Egypt that the Egyptians did, which were not moral things. They are called to'evah, an abomination. It's not something that's hateful, it's something that is abominable. What does abominable mean? It basically means disgusting, repulsive. Any other word, Ken?
What is the word for sin in Hebrew?
The word for sin is chet, which means you missed the mark. And to'eva is like you've gone astray. This is chapter 18. Now turn to chapter 20, which is on page 505, which is in Parshat Kedoshim. Chapter 20, which is not immediately following chapter 18, is the punishments are listed for any of the sins mentioned in chapter 18. And this is called in Hebrew the Onshin al Ha'azharot, the punishments based on the warnings that were given in chapter 18. And interestingly, very interestingly, which sin and punishment is mentioned first? So if you were to pick chapter 18 and look at it very carefully, all these different sins that take place, you would presumably, if you mentioned the punishments, you would go in order of the warnings and therefore say, well, in chapter 18 it said so-and-so, the punishment for that is so-and-so. The Torah does not begin like that. The Torah instead begins by the sin of a molech, and it says something very, very unusual about the punishment of a molech that I want to share with you. God says in sentence number 3, page 505, Vani etenet panai ba'ishahu. I'm going to give my face against this man who sacrifices his son to appease his god. Kimi zaro, because he is given from his seed to a molech in order to defile my sanctuary and to profane my holy sanctuary. And if for some reason, listen carefully in sentence four, the people do not do justice, because why don't people do justice? Because you want to have compassion. God says something in this sentence that I don't think he says in any other sentence in the whole Torah. If the family wants to cover up the sin, because every family has a family secret, and you don't want it out publicly, and there's something going on in your family, and you want to cover it up, take a look at sentence 5. V'samti ani et ponai ba'ishahu uva mishpachto. The first time, and I think the only time in the whole Torah, that if the family wants to conceal what's going on, and it's so bad that it falls in the category of a molech, says God, I not only will punish the person who does it, but I will punish the family that conceals. It's an amazing thing. Why is this amazing? Because most families, they have their secret. And what do most parents do? Most parents want to be very understanding and not set adequate limits and boundaries. And by not setting adequate limits and boundaries, the Torah is saying you're not doing the proper thing. And if it falls into the category of a molech or any of the other sexual things that take place which are inappropriate. Now let me give you a clinical example of this that happens rather quite frequently, unfortunately. Let's say there's sexual abuse in a family. And let's say the father does it to a daughter, or maybe an uncle does it to a niece. Or an older brother does it to a younger sister. Things like that. If this is not dealt with, then we have to also look at the mother. What does the mother do? And in many, many cases, the mother, for a variety of reasons, which are not lofty and holy, her own insecurity, her own fear, her own marriage, usually sometimes is quiet and makes believe that they don't know, or I didn't know. And later on, when the adult children confront their mom, sometimes they will own up to it, sometimes not. But this is what it's talking about, that if there's something going on in your family, you cannot be quiet. Particularly if it deals with such a huge, huge thing of either molech or other things that go on. So the interesting thing is molech is mentioned first. Yet in the parsha of chapter 18, molech is mentioned almost towards the end. Well, they think,
the people who give their child, think that this idol is like a king to them. We, on Yom Kippur, we always say, God is Melech Malkei Hamlachim, the king of all kings. So they think the Molech is like the king.
Now, interestingly, just to show you something, this is the whole chapter. It says, turn to the next page. Also says here that if you do these things, the earth will. I'm trying to find the exact word here. If you do these things, the earth will vomit you out. Let me see where it says that. Yes. 23 and 24, you shouldn't go into the statues of these other nations, va'akutzbam, the same word, va'aki, and you will not inherit the land. So in both cases, so the question is, and this is the key question, that in both sections the laws are mentioned, and in yet this is the only place in the Torah where the warnings and the punishments are not mentioned together. So if that's the case, it would behoove us very, very carefully to look at chapter 19, the chapter that connects 18 and 20. So let's take a careful look at chapter 19, the beginning. There are only, by Daber Hashem el Moshe Lemor, page 497, Daber el kol adat b'nei Yisrael, speak upon the entire congregation of Israel, and you shall tell them this famous sentence. Everyone knows this sentence. It's like one of the most famous words in the whole Bible, kadoshim tiyu. The mandate of every person is to try to be kadosh. Kadosh is one of those words, it's very hard to translate. It means much more than holy. There's a sense of numinosity here. There's a sense of differentness. You'll be so distinct, you shall be holy. And what shall happen to you? Ki kadosh ani, because I am also holy. So in your holiness and my holiness, we will have a relationship. And how should this holiness be expressed? In sentence 3, Ish imo va'aviv tirau. Each person shall have reverence for his mother and his father. Now, when you hear the sentence, Ish imo va'aviv tirau, each person shall have reverence for his mother and father, what's the immediate free association you have in your mind? What does this remind you of? The Ten Commandments. So the rabbis say the Ten Commandments are mentioned 3 times in the Torah. In Parshat Yitro, we covered. In Deuteronomy, they were repeated again with slight variation. And this is the 3rd time, and there's a 4th time later on also at the end of Deuteronomy, but this is the 3rd time that the Ten Commandments are mentioned. But they're mentioned in slightly different form and slightly different variation. What is the main difference? The main difference is, in contrast to the 1st time the Ten Commandments are mentioned, where it says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who has taken you out of Egypt. What does it begin with? It begins with reverence for parents. Ish imo va'aviv tirau. So there's something about reverence for parents that needs to be understood to tie together chapter 18 and chapter 20. There's something about the Ten Commandments, specifically the highlight of reverence for your mom and your father. And people ask, why is a mother mentioned first? There's a Talmudic reason and there is a non-Talmudic reason. The Talmudic reason is, well, in the days of old, we would have more fear for our father, and therefore the Torah says in order to sublimate that, you should also have fear for your mom. The other reason is, who deals with the baby first? Mom. First mom, and then your father, and that's the normal sequence of events. So therefore, the main aspect of chapter 19, which everyone likes chapter 19 because it's V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, you shall love thy neighbor as yourself, it's the most famous sentence in the whole Torah. However, it begins with Ish imo va'aviv tirau, that each person should have reverence and understanding and a certain amount of fear for his mother and his father. Yes?
And yet we've already been told, thou shalt not be silent if there's abuse in the family, and you are
witness
to it.
Right.
So where would that fit in?
We'll get to that. It's a good question. So there's something we need to understand about Ish imo va'aviv tirau. You should have reverence for your father and mother. And by the way, excuse me for turning from page to page, but I do want to show you something. Hold on to this page and turn to page 506, 507. At the very bottom of the page, it says, Ki ish ish asher yekalel et aviv imo, if you curse your father and your mother, mot yumat, you shall surely die. Aviv imo kilel damav bo. So the rabbis say, why is the repetition about cursing your mother and father? So Rashi quotes the Chazal, and Rashi says, this prohibition of cursing your mother and father applies not only in their lifetime, but also after their death. That even after they died, for whatever reason, you cannot curse your mother and father. And that's why there's a prohibition which is mentioned twice. Now let's go back to Ish Imo Vaviv Tiro. By the way, I didn't mention, but I do want to say, on page 497, when it says, Daber el kol adat b'nei Yisrael, speak to the entire congregation of Israel, that expression, Daber el kol adat b'nei Yisrael, is only mentioned by one other mitzvah, that you should speak to the entire congregation. Does anyone remember which one? No. What?
The beginning.
No. It was when, in chapter 12, sentence 2, about how Chodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodashim, the new moon, and then you should take a seh, you should take a lamb, it's talking how you should do Pesach. So in reference to Pesach, it says, Daber el kol adat b'nei Yisrael. So there's something special about these Ten Commandments, specifically Ish Imo Baviv Tirou, and it combines also the importance of what they did in Egypt to celebrate in order to get out of Egypt. Now, in order to understand this, I want to show you something that happens to be in your Chumash that comes from the Haftarah. You know Haftarahs come from other parts. So there's a Haftarah that I want you to turn to. That comes from the book of Amos, and I'll show you where that is. Hold this page and turn to page 152. Amos was one of the great prophets, and he talks about in a very unusual expression that I want you to see. He says, you know, people do sin. There are fathers who sin, there are sons who sin, and there are daughters who sin. And that takes place. However, he mentions a type of sin that is only mentioned once in the entire Bible, which is a very, very unusual sin. In sentence number 7, on page 152, in the middle it says as follows, Ish va'aviv yelchu el hanara, a man and his father go to the na'ara. The na'ara is the woman, the prostitute. So Amos is saying as follows. Amos is saying, you know, sometimes a son will sin, sometimes a father will sin. Normally, if a son doesn't have some embarrassment in front of the father, certainly the father should have embarrassment in front of the son. In other words, no matter what a father or mother does, no matter how wrong it is, they usually do it discreetly, not with their son or not with their daughter. Says Amos, there have been cases, Ish va'aviv, a man and his son, yelchu el hanara. And what happens then? Laman halel et shem kachi, in order to desecrate the holiness of my name. Well, I don't understand. If a son and father, if they go to a prostitute, it's not laman halel et shem kachi in order to desecrate the holiness. Why do they go to a prostitute? It's because they're yetzahara. They have an evil inclination. Says Amos, however, it's much deeper than that. When two generations, father and son, go to the na'ara, it's way beyond fulfilling a sexual desire. It has to do with a total desecration and deviation from the holy sanctuary and my name that is in you. So remember that expression. I think it's the only time which is mentioned in the entire Bible. Ish va'aviv. And it doesn't only mean ish va'aviv, a man and his father. It could mean a daughter and her mother. It could be a daughter and her father. Yes, sir.
Is the point that they're both hurting the same person, I mean, in the case of a father and son, the mother?
No, that's not the point.
But there's also a
creation of a bondage there. It's all the guilt, I think, that continues.
No, it's not that they're hurting the same person. Are you referring to the Nara?
Yeah, okay. The two generations long is the same person. That it's an affront to the mother, to the wife and mother, they're the same person.
That's true also, but that's not it. No, I'll tell you what it is.
Is it a sharing of the eight sera?
No.
What it also has to do is what you're talking about in the family when you cover up a crime. Sounds like they're in cahoots and becoming nothing. It's not in the face of the whole covenant with God.
Right, so Raya is heading in the right direction.
Bonding through guilt.
One of the main things is as follows. Is this chapter 19 is a famous chapter, particularly in very, very liberal circles. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, you shall love your neighbor as thyself, we do it better than everyone else, say some liberal circles, we're so good, we have good intention, and things like that. Says the Torah, and it couldn't be more clear, you can never differentiate and distinct between laws, you should love your neighbor as yourself, and chapter 18 and chapter 20. Because it's ultimately the same thing. And what is the key aspect of being nice to another person? You should love your neighbor. There has to be continuity. You live here. Maimonides lived there. Rabbi Akiva lived there. Moshe lived there. Abraham there. And all future generations. It's like, are you part of some huge collective that's all connected? Or, God forbid, are you part of this generation of Amos where not only was there no embarrassment of a son in front of his father, but also no embarrassment of a father in front of his son? And what they're doing is they're cutting off the future of the Jewish people. In other words, people do sin. But even in sinning, you have to be careful. Do you sin for a Yetzirah purpose, which is your evil sexual inclination? That's one level of sinning. But then there's a much greater level of sinning. And that greater level of sinning is when you cut off the next generation. And that's what this is talking about. Now let's go back to a few of the things which I said. The real function, the Torah is saying, the real function of who you are, you have to decide for yourself, are you a constructive, creative person, or are you destructive and cutting things off for the future? That's like the main question you have in your life. And that's why it says, by Daber El Kol Adat B'nei Israel, because Pesach and Passover, when you have it with your children and a grandfather, and you pass it on and pass it on, that's what it's all about. Not only living a meaningful life, but living a meaningful life so it's passed on. So when you're not here anymore, it will still continue in a very strong, visible, and exciting way. And how does that take place? There are two ways that people can go. Either people can go Ish va'aviv, yelchu el hanara, a man and his father will go to that woman, or a mother and a daughter will go to that man, or Ish imova viv tirao, or each person shall have reverence for a mother and father. Ultimately, what the Torah is saying, if you want continuity, the family is really the core.
It's going to be a self-centeredness in society.
Yes, there was a book by Yankelevich and Barrett, and they said the sin of the 1960s or 70s was narcissism. It's like, you didn't go to a party and the party was good. It's like, why was I left out of that party? There's a whole book on that.
It's like a notion, it doesn't hurt anyone, so...
It doesn't hurt anyone. And so says the Torah, now we have a new insight into something very interesting. Now go back to page 492. And you'll see a new insight. Every sexual sin which you do with your daughter, your son, your sister, you know the impact of that sin? what's the impact? It destroys the family and it destroys the continuity. The pain of that is so enormous that it's carried on for the next 50 years of the new generation. And then, you know why I throw in the sentence 21 about Molech? Just in case you don't get the message that the sexual sin is really cutting people off for the continuity, I'm telling you, Molech is in the same category. Molech, when you give your son or give your daughter to that god and the son or daughter is burned in fire and totally gone and obliterated and there's no more son and no more daughter, that's put in the same category. And furthermore, now I understand why homosexuality is put in this parsha as well, right after Molech. In case you don't understand one of the aspects of why the Torah is against homosexuality, whether it's male or female, it's because it's comparable to Molech, because there's no continuity. And in case you still don't get it, then turn to the beginning of chapter 20, where all the punishments are mentioned on 505, and it says, the main aspect of all the consequences of sexual sins is cutting off the continuity. And therefore, says the Torah, if you do this and you cut off the continuity, in both sections it says, the earth shall vomit you out. Because there's no harmony left between the family, you and your children and your grandchildren. Yes, ma'am.
There must be many people here who've read or seen the Visit to Salesman by Arthur Miller.
Right.
There's an anguish scene when the son discovers that William's been cheating on mom. And how the son is so anguished at how it affects the family life. And really it's just protecting oneself all out
of the family. No, one of the things that these secrets in family life ultimately do come out. There was this book, I'm trying to think of the name, the well-known novelist, what's his name? Robertson Davies. So he wrote this fantastic book about, is that the book? Yeah, about this man, he's investigating the murder of his father. You know the book, some of you? And he goes into, he's an attorney who doesn't know anything about the higher self, and then he goes into analysis in this book, and the book is a fascinating book where he finally understands how his father died, and it really was a murder, but then he goes to the Na'ara, to that lady, and it's just at his time in his life where he ends up going to the Na'ara as well. And he begins to understand how his father's death actually took place. And what you're saying is correct. The sons and the daughters do find out in ways that some people call the whispering of the walls. You may not know it exactly, but you know it. And then that becomes a role model for you in a negative sense. Ryan?
The other thing is they're all considered perversions. I mean, you want your children to emulate the good qualities. So they look at you
on
a pedestal,
but instead they're looking at you in a negative way. They don't even realize that that's kind of how religious functionality can break off in the family community. Right.
And it's
retaking
you mentioned
also perversion
of what God wants you to do.
Mm-hmm. And says the Torah, what is the antidote for that? And it's very interesting that it doesn't mention the word here when the Ten Commandments are mentioned, it doesn't use the word kabed, because kabed means to honor in a positive way. Before you do kabed in a positive way, you know what's more important? Is to have a little reverence. And in the 1990s here in America, children do not have that much reverence for their parents. They consider them, he's my best friend, she's my best friend, we do this. And the concept of that I'm your mother and I'm your father is so important, elemental and fundamental, that sometimes is forgotten. There was this book written by a contemporary, first my daughter, now my friend. A It's like, that's the popular thing, that mother and daughter should be friends. Well, it's good to be friends.
In adulthood.
But even in adulthood, there has to be ish imo vavitiro, a sense of yira, a sense of reverence. Yes.
What about reverence in the family where there is abuse?
Oh, well, that's what Meg was asking, on what should be done in those situations. I'll get to that in a moment. But I just want to say, and that's why the Ten Commandments are repeated again. Because in the way to stop the temptation of going into arayot is to know that whatever action you do, no matter what you think, it has impact and the implications for the other people and for Judaism collectively and your family and children and grandchildren. And that's why it says ish imo vavitiro. Yes.
I was thinking about similar things when I was just driving to this class, and the subjective experience of people who don't experience guilt when they do certain things, and whether it be the example that's brought up in the Torah as the parents going and sacrificing their children, and that would be ludicrous for us. And
right.
You think, how could somebody do that?
Right.
Well, I think many people in many different secular fields approach this as being set and defined by the cultural norms, whether it be, and they all do it in their own variety of different ways, whether it be philosophy or psychology or sociology, in particular anthropology, which studies different cultures around the world. And every culture has food taboos and sexual taboos, and everybody experiences guilt if they do something wrong that the society defines as wrong, and if they don't experience any type of guilt, if that society defines it to be okay and
mm-hmm.
part of the norm.
Right.
So what I was thinking exactly was the Torah coming along and saying, look, man can and is capable of making this reality for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way being godly.
Exactly.
And
kadoshim tiyu, you should be separate, ki kadosh ani.
But it should be that your reality should not be based on the laws that you set, but rather based on the laws that I set. That your phenomenological and subjective reality should not be based on whatever cultural norms that comes and goes
right.
throughout the cultures and through the ages, but rather what is prescribed here by me.
It's very, very well said. A lot of people, they get used to something because it's a cultural thing in the 90s or in the 80s to do certain things, and it's accepted. And says the Torah, this is transcending any cultural aspect in a particular generation. More? And then we'll get
it. It's something for which, down through the ages, we've never been forgiven, forgiving of these laws. As a matter of fact, we've been accused by many of our enemies of being the inventors of conscience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Hitler wrote that in Mein Kampf. Yeah. He's one of the reasons he was angry at the Jewish people is because of conscience, of human conscience.
Yes, life-denying laws.
Right. And that's one of the main reasons of anti-Semitism.
But that also tough teaching says about us. We can learn from our enemies. We can learn about ourselves from our enemies, so to speak.
Right. So two questions were asked, and I want to respond to the two questions. They were good questions. What type of filial responsibility is necessary or is warranted in cases where people have deviated from the norms of chapter 18? Good question. Any suggestions?
Well, I think there should be reverence for the parent in that they gave the person life. And in that connection, that person is a God, a creator of that person.
So despite whatever took place, there needs to be some reverence for the fact that you were given the gift of life. Anyone else on that? What do you think, Mary?
Well, I think in modern times there's usually a court trial and therapy and ultimately, hopefully, some kind of reconciliation and forgiveness. How it was in that era.
Ultimately, I think no matter what pain may have been inflicted on you, and I'm not minimizing the pain, if you're able to rise above it and forgive, you've done yourself a great, great gift. Scott Peck says in The Road Less Traveled, this is one of his good lines, excellent lines, he says, when you forgive someone else, you have done yourself a tremendous deed. Because when you don't forgive someone else, that toxicity is in you.
You can't
forgive. Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You can't forgive, but you should still go to the tomb once a year to release. Still, all that should be done.
Come up with the concept of quite you can only forgive the sin that is against you. In other words, your father and mother mistreated you, then you can forgive that, but if they killed somebody else, then you can't really forgive that, right? I mean,
right, it's not God takes care of that, but it doesn't mean that you can't have a relationship with your mom and dad.
I have a question before. Good point, I like that.
In another case, it says, Kaved es avicha, you should honor your father and your mother. So the rabbis say, the reason it says father first, because you normally would do these things for your mom, and therefore in order to sublimate things, you mention that. That's what the rabbis say. But in this case, I think, it's like there's an educational methodology. First, your mom is your educator, and then your father is your educator.
I was just trying to come to my own way just to deal with how this sentence about holding your father, your mother and father in awe,
right.
The way
right.
I read that word, that meant, from what I've come to understand, that there's a certain mystery about your parents, and that this mystery is being called to your attention at the beginning of this. Leviticus 19, where we're going to be given some rules and laws to stand by. Some of the rules are clearly things that you can reason. Some of the things have no reasons for them. You said about cutting off the future, but this sentence seems to speak that may be the consequence of cutting off the future. But the reason for it is forgetting the past, not giving the past its due respect, mm-hmm. so to speak. And that's what this sentence seems to be saying, that there is a mystery to your parents. You will never know what your parents were like, no matter how they may have explained it to them. And from an answer for these questions about what happens if they didn't treat you correctly, what happens if they did bad things during their lives,
right.
that you can never really come to terms with that.
Right.
That there is this mystery about your parents, just like there is a mystery about the past. But there are traditions, there are good things to learn from them, and this is what we're going to learn from them. That the Torah teaches these things to us, and when you don't come to terms yourself with the past, then the future will be in the sense that a sexual future is talking about future generations.
Right.
Will suffer as a consequence. So
right. Once you recognize that life itself and the life of your parents is a mystery, and all the things positive and negative falls in that category, then you won't be, you won't hold that judgment, that harsh judgment. You'll feel the pain that may have been inflicted, that was inflicted, but you'll go back to the era, and that's a much more healthy thing. Ultimately, what the Torah is saying, when you respect and have reverence for your father and mother, no matter what they have done, that's the way to provide for continuity.
It doesn't even speak of love. You
know? No, it doesn't. It does not speak of love. When it talks about parents, it does not say the word love. It uses the word yira, reverence, and kavod, which is honor. It does not speak about love. Yes.
What would be the contemporary interpretation for moloch? Would that be like giving up a child because it's financially
Well, I read a fascinating book called The Abandonment of the Child. I forgot the author's name right now. It's a very big book, a history and sociology of the abandonment of the child. And I couldn't believe when I read historically what has taken place and how many people have given up children. It was mind-boggling, the percentage. They frequently gave children out as young prostitutes. They put them on church steps. It was mind-boggling, the percentage. I couldn't believe that. I had to read that book over and over again. I couldn't believe it. Huge percentage in the Middle Ages, throughout the ages, close to...
Well, they do now. It's only because it's in the drugs, plays,
it was anywhere, it was almost up to 10, 20, 33%, huge percentage. All for thousands of years until around the year 1400, 1500. Yes, I'm sorry. And I think there are other ways that we give up our children to molest. A lot of people live vicariously through their children. And that's a little bit where when you live vicariously through your children and you don't have the courage and fortitude to take your own risks, you try to live a meaningful life vicariously, that's not healthy. It's not the same thing as molech, but it's a little comparable. Yes.
I think in honoring your father and mother also, in a way that kind of puts a limit on some of the gods.